This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Realtors Association President John Armstrong says the State Farm uncertainty is hurting his marketplace.
We're all hearing stories about this person who bought a house for $650,000 and now they're selling it for $550,000 4 years later. Those are true stories.
Ryan Denham reports on the first half of 2018 in Bloomington normal housing sales. Plus, Colleen Reynolds reports on the resurrection of a legendary dinner theater in central Illinois. Eric Stock unpacks a measure to encourage and regulate urban farming. The state treasurer talks about a new retirement savings program that will affect more than a million Illinoisans, and Mike McCurdy has GLT's Grow. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The summer home buying season is well underway, and those in the business hope it's a turning point for the local real estate market. GLT's Ryan Denham talked to buyers, sellers, realtors, and loan officers to get a checkup on the housing market. They say there are signs a cloud of uncertainty hanging over the market is starting to lift.
You know what's not good for a real estate market? A ton of uncertainty about the market's biggest employer. That was the story during the first 6 months of 2018, as rumors swirled about State Farm and its plans to shed or relocate hundreds of Bloomington Normal employees. Bloomington Normal Association of Realtors President John Armstrong says 2018 got off to a slow start.
One of the biggest reasons was we had a little bit of unrest in the community. Is my job safe? You know, I don't really want to be making this move, not knowing what my future is. And I think a lot of people kind of sat on the fence for the first 6 months of the year. A lot of these folks were notified that they're safe towards the end of June.
Uncertainty surrounding State Farm was one of the biggest pressures on the Twin City housing market during the first half of the year. Sales are down 10% through May, and average prices are down 2% too, according to the Association of Realtors. While cheaper homes are selling fast to first-time buyers, those in the industry say the market is soft in the higher price ranges, above $250,000. Prices are dropping on those more expensive homes. New construction has largely dried up. Keith Thompson is a senior loan officer at MSI in Bloomington.
We used to be in this thing we called the bubble because we had State Farm and ISU and Mitsubishi, and you know, we had great employers that kept the market rolling, and State Farm being the, of course, by far the major one. We were always in that bubble that things were going well no matter what, and that's just not the case at the moment.
Realtor John Armstrong agrees.
We're all hearing stories about, you know, I heard this person who bought a house for $650,000 and now they're selling it for $550,000 4 years later. Those stories are out there. Those are true stories that happens, and you can find that information out on Zillow. And you know, when you look at the upper end of our market, chances are they probably didn't go up in value if they were purchased in the last 10 years. The upper end definitely has taken a hit, and that's because we don't have the jobs in Bloomington Normal to support that upper end of the market. I mean, so the prices have kind of, I like to say they've corrected. They've gone down to what's affordable for a person. They've corrected themselves.
Last year was a bit of a different story. That's when the average price of an existing home sold in the Bloomington Normal market rose 4% to $168,000. This year, average prices are down slightly, around $163,000. 2017's rising prices were unusual and were not likely to continue this year. That's according to Mike Doherty, an Illinois Farm Bureau economist who studied the local economy.
And I'm skeptical because of seeing the decline in the labor force numbers. We just, you know, we've got fewer people in the labor force, and our employment numbers are not bouncing back to higher levels. So it's kind of hard to imagine where would future gains in those housing prices come from.
That said, Doherty doubted that State Farm's job cuts would have a significant negative impact on the overall housing market. He spoke to GLT's Charlie Schlenker this spring.
I would think it would soften it just a little bit, but you know, the net change in jobs is in the hundreds, so a pretty small percentage of our total labor force. We've got 90,000 people working here in Bloomington Normal.
State Farm uncertainty has lessened in recent weeks, Armstrong says, noting a period in late June when a lot of people found out their jobs were safe or not. During a three-week stretch from June 20th to July 11th, Armstrong says 199 homes were sold. It's a significant increase from the 162 sold during that same period last year.
What we're seeing is the median price of a house that's sold since that June 20th date has been $230,000, which is significantly higher than the median price really is in Bloomington Normal. So it's a different type of buyer, and it's that buyer that says, I'm safe now.
Armstrong says there are also rumblings that State Farm's job cuts won't be as deep as initially expected. Indeed, State Farm confirmed in late June that its overall IT job cuts company-wide would be fewer than the 500 figure that was announced in March. Location-specific numbers are not available. On the lower end of the housing market, things are moving fast. Gabriella Harnish of Normal and her husband put their two-bedroom ranch home on the market this summer, looking to get something bigger to accommodate their growing family. They thought it would take 4 or 5 months to sell.
She put it on the market on a Friday. We had a showing on Saturday, an open house on Sunday, and by Tuesday we had an offer accepted. So, 4 days.
One reason for quick sales is low inventory, meaning there aren't many homes on the market in certain price ranges. Experts say a market is balanced when it would take around 5 months to sell off all the homes currently on the market. It's also known as the absorption rate. Some lower price ranges in Bloomington Normal have just 2 or 3 months of inventory. That imbalance makes it a seller's market. Armstrong says even the $400,000 plus range has just 4 months of inventory. Harnish and her husband, the quick sellers, were finally able to find a home they both wanted to buy. They'll move in next month.
We were looking for something that was move-in ready, but within our price range. And so that was a little difficult because kind of in that lower price range, some of those homes need work.
And you're in luck if you're selling in that $150,000 to $180,000 range, the seller's market, and then looking to move up and buy something over $300,000 where prices are falling. That's according to Monica Bullington, an independent agent at RE/MAX Rising in Bloomington. She was Harnish's agent.
$300,000 or even above that, you really get the opportunity to have it both ways, which is nice. Alternatively, if you're selling in a market that's more of a buyer's market where you have to compete and be aggressive, you know, you might take a loss on that, and then you're buying in a very competitive market if you're downsizing. So you really have to just understand the market in which you're moving in and out of, and that will help you, you know, make those decisions. State Farmers perhaps might be downsizing from those large houses into more modest, you know, family-sized homes. So you kind of just have to know what you're dealing with so you can make the right decision.
Meanwhile, new construction continues to struggle. Here's Keith Thompson, the loan officer.
There's no new construction going on at all. That is the segment of the market that is completely gone. It's kind of crazy.
As recently as 2010, McLean County was seeing a couple of hundred new homes built and sold every year. Last year, it was only 137, and only 42 have sold in the first 5 months of 2018. One reason, Armstrong says, is because of those higher-priced existing homes becoming more affordable.
Just because the housing market values went down in 2007 didn't mean the cost of a 2x4 went down. It's still the same. So it costs the same to build a house, but that 2,400 square foot house that you can build for $330, when you can buy it for $290 existing, you know, there's a level where it's acceptable. There's a percentage where it's acceptable. I personally think it's about 6 or 7%. If you can save 6 or 7% and buy existing, why wouldn't you do that? But there are certain people out there that they just don't want anything but new. They don't want to live in somebody else's house. So those people are willing to pay 6 or 7% more. They're not willing to pay 15% more.
So why can't home builders just build cheaper houses to fill up inventory in those lower price ranges? Because land is expensive, especially in farm-fertile McLean County. That leaves cutting corners in the construction side to lower the overall cost. Here's Keith Thompson.
You can't put a home out there anymore, or you can't create one or build one for anything close to 125. So, I mean, that'd be a lot, just development costs and stuff. So, you know, I think if there was a place where we could use more houses, it would be in the very low price ranges. But, again, that's that's tough to create.
Sales numbers for June, typically one of the busiest months of the year, are expected to be released this week. I'm Ryan Denham.
You can see more housing sales data in an interactive graphic on our website, WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from the Rhonda Glenn Law Offices. With offices in McLean and Livingston counties, they've served clients throughout Illinois for 30 years with quality legal services in family law, including adoption and dissolution of marriage. Information at glennlawoffices.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, a measure that would promote and regulate urban farming. Over the next year and a half, more than a million workers in Illinois will start saving money for their retirement, where they might have been saving nothing before. It's part of a new program run through the Treasurer's Office. State Treasurer Michael Frerichs joins us to talk about the Secure Choice program. You've just started a pilot effort and are already learning things about the larger program.
There are eight employers who signed up to participate in Secure Choice, and this is the first wave. We had deliberately worked with a smaller number of employers, but from different parts of the state and different industries and different size employers to try and learn something. Well, we've already discovered that some employers have said that there were problems with the website. It wasn't clear that they could submit an Excel spreadsheet with all their employees' names in it, so we've made that change to accommodate them. We also had some employees who worked in the service industry. Our program is set up for a percentage deduction, and they said, you know, my income changes every week, every month. Can I just give a flat contribution to my IRA? And they can. It was a change we made. And we expect we're going to learn and we're going to make more improvements as we go forward.
There is a Bloomington Normal business in this test program. Tell us about that.
Fox and Hounds. So we're working with one employer here in McLean County. We have employers in Chicagoland, in Peoria, in Bloomington, Springfield, and Mount Vernon. We wanted them spread out around the state to see if there were any problems. So far, the rollout has gone well, and we're looking very much forward to a larger wave of employers signing up this fall.
What is the uptake on employees who are saying, you know what, I want to be part of this now that it's being offered?
Everyone knows they need to save for their retirement. Unfortunately, if you have to go out and set up your own account and choose your investments and write checks, too many people put it off. About half of working age adults in our country have less than $5,000 saved for retirement. They're not going to be able to enjoy their golden years. That is not going to be a retirement with dignity. And so we need to make it easier for people to save their own money for their retirement. Studies have shown if you have a workplace retirement savings option, you are 15 times more likely to be saving for your retirement. So we think the answer is Secure Choice, giving people that option to have automatic payroll deduction, where it's taken out of your paycheck, it never comes to you, you don't miss it, but then it's invested and it grows over time. So when you reach retirement, you've got a little nest egg there so that you can have a retirement with some dignity. So employees are automatically enrolled. An automatic 5% contribution to their own individual Roth IRA. They can increase that, they can decrease that, or they can opt out. But so far, the participation rates have been pretty good. And that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that more people are saving their own money for retirement so that they can really enjoy their golden years.
Is the Roth the right instrument for these middle to low income people who are likely to be enrolled?
We have a Secure Choice Savings Board. It's a bipartisan board. We reached unanimous agreement on this, especially for younger employees who are going to have many years to contribute and hopefully have tremendous growth in terms of interest earned. We think the Roth IRA is the best choice for them.
Why? Rather than something that is tax deferred, that they can pay the tax penalty if they actually need to get it out. If for a Roth, you're prepaying the tax.
But the growth in the account, you don't pay taxes on. We think that doing that way will ultimately, they'll realize much more savings, much smaller tax burden.
Next step for rollout.
This fall, we're going to start enrolling employers with more than 500 employees. And then the following spring, we'll move to medium-sized employers. And then next fall, the smallest employers out there. Ultimately, this program is going to affect about 1.2 million Illinoisans. 1.2 million Illinoisans will hopefully be put on a pathway to retirement savings. that's going to be good for them, it'll be good for their families, but it's also going to be good for our entire state. Because too many people, when they reach retirement, their spending drops precipitously. Well, that's not necessarily good for our economy. And some of these people are going to go on to access state services because they're living near poverty. That is going to cost all of us. This retirement crisis is going to affect everyone in our state and everyone in our country. We need to do something to fix it.
How long till the program reaches full maturity, do you think?
We think within the next year and a half, everyone who is affected by the current legislation will be signed up. And our hope is that by doing this in waves here, we'll learn lessons and we won't have a system crash. And it'll be a seamless transition for most employees in the state.
With more than a million people involved, with money that had not been saved before, even though it should have been saved, is that a large enough number to affect the economy and consumption patterns around the state?
So we find that when people have it automatically deducted and they don't miss the money, they're happy to save that money. And so we think the long-term benefits for the state outweigh any small or minor short-term consequences. You know, if you ask Americans what their greatest concerns are, one of the greatest concerns they have is retirement insecurity. If we can make people feel more confident about their decisions, you know, we think that's going to translate into better behaviors going forward. You know, one of the reasons employers like this is because if their employees are not stressed, if they're happy, they're more productive employees.
Secure choice will be mandatory for businesses that do not have their own employment retirement savings options. Michael Frerichs is the Illinois State Treasurer. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Every time you open your eyes,
our photoreceptor cells respond to about 1/10 trillionth of the spectrum of light.
And just from that, your brain builds a perception of what you see.
And then we believe that that is what the world, quote unquote, looks like. It turns out that's not true. There's a lot more going on in the world around us.
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about sight and our four other senses, that's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Sundays at 10 a.m. on GLT.
Support for GLT comes from the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, announcing British royalty romance and tomfoolery at this year's summer season. The hilarious Merry Wives of Windsor, heroic Henry V, and witty romantic Shakespeare in Love run July through early August. Tickets at IllinoisShakes.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, how to watch your garden like a hawk. It's WGLT's Grow. A measure awaiting Governor Bruce Rauner's signature would enable local counties or municipalities to create urban agricultural zones in areas where access to food is limited. GLT's Eric Stock explores how the ag zones work and whether they could help the food deserts that exist in Bloomington Normal.
Sonia Harper is a state representative whose district covers the contrasting sides of Chicago that have come to symbolize the Windy City.
I think my district perfectly represents the two Chicagos that everybody talks about, the great part that everybody sees on TV. So I got part of the loop downtown, all of that. But I grew up on the south side of the city in a neighborhood called West Englewood that's a food desert.
Harper says her community in the southwest side of Chicago has one grocery store to serve close to 70,000 people. And many of those residents lack transportation.
Well, if I'm an elderly person, if I'm a mother with lots of kids, I don't really have good access to get to that grocery store easily. In the other part of my district, probably not even 10 miles away, residents there can walk to 5 different grocery stores, 5 different restaurants.
So Harper helped create a farming community in her inner city neighborhood through a program called Grow Greater Englewood. Its mission is to, one, help fill that grocery store void, two, put people to work using vacant and abandoned property, and three, give people in her hometown healthier food options.
Every day, more people are dying in our communities from preventable diet-related diseases, more so than bullets. We figured out a way how to use our vacant land, because we have lots of vacant land, as a way to grow food, as a way to meet our own dietary needs.
Harper says several farms have set up in Englewood, while much of the produce is sold at food stands and farmers markets. She says the group is still working on improving distribution chains so the food can help people across a wider area. Harper has since left the group and become a state legislator. She figures if it can work in Englewood as a pilot project, why can't it work elsewhere in the state? The Democrat, who took office in 2015, championed a measure to allow local governments to create urban agricultural zones intended to give incentives to producers to set up in food deserts. Sales taxes from agriculture products would be diverted to a fund that could be dedicated for a county, municipality, or one or more school district. While there are pockets throughout Bloomington Normal where food access is more limited, the problem is most prevalent in some West Bloomington neighborhoods, where grocery stores are sparse and many lower-income residents lack reliable transportation. Bloomington's city planner, Katie Simpson, says improving access to healthy food is just one goal listed in the city's latest 20-year comprehensive plan.
That's a challenge that was identified in our comprehensive plan. It was identified in the 2016 Community Health Needs Assessment. It's something that I think we can work towards on a local level to address that.
Simpson suggests there are several locations where an urban farming district might work, including the warehouse district south of downtown.
It's located near the farmers market, so there's synergy there with some of the other uses. There's also not active grocery store in close proximity, so this would give, you know, an opportunity for fresh food.
Simpson added the warehouse district's close access to Route 51 would make for easier delivery and distribution. The city's comprehensive report also suggests the former Sugar Creek packing plant site south of the library as an urban ag zone, though Simpson adds there are no formal plans in place for either. She says urban farms can go beyond raw produce and expand their sales base.
Taking not only the raw tomato, for example, that might be produced, but then turning that into spaghetti sauce or tomato soup and selling that. So there's other educational as well as job opportunities there with processing it, distributing it.
The city planner says whether the gardens are for commercial or personal consumption, there's benefit either way.
We see it with the urban gardens. We see communities coming together and people working on gardening together. So that's an intangible benefit, strengthening community and also strengthening McLean County and Bloomington's identity as an agricultural community. This just reinforces it.
The city is working to overhaul its zoning ordinances this summer with plans to dive into the thorny issue of allowing beekeeping and chicken keeping. Normal banned chicken coops in 2011. The city is also looking to allow urban farming in residential areas, though it's something that at least one family is already doing. Armando Baez of Bloomington never intended to be an urban farmer. Looking for work after interning at a local farm, he unwittingly planted the seed for a new calling in life.
I had this old, you know, bucket full of seeds that I hadn't used yet, and I really wanted to do something with it. And I also didn't have a job, and I loved growing food, so pretty much grew a little bit of everything, and everything, for the most part, grew from those old seeds.
Armando and his wife, Claire, grow everything from broccoli to cucumbers to snap peas in the back and front yard of their home near downtown. Growing more than they ever imagined, they want their crops to fulfill a greater purpose.
I think the mission has changed and evolved as we figured out what we wanted to do with it, how we wanted it to help the community, and also how it worked with our family.
The Baezes donate much of what they don't eat, even with three hungry boys at home, ages 6 years to 6 months. While the produce goes to friends, neighbors, and groups like Veggie Oasis, Baez also dispenses advice to anyone looking to grow on their own.
You have to pay for some of the supplies that you buy, but I think we really wanted to provide food to our neighbors and to people that can really use it.
And Claire Baez suggests it may not be as easy as you think.
Man. Get an internship,
yeah,
apprentice,
yeah,
with somebody. Don't just dive in head first.
Yeah.
I'm Eric Stock.
A spokesperson for Governor Bruce Rauner says his office is still reviewing about 600 bills lawmakers have sent to him following the spring session. No comment whether he plans to sign the Urban Ag Zone bill. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, dinner and a show. Colleen Reynolds has more on a new option yet to come. You can keep your garden landscaping under surveillance to protect your investment from pests and people. GLT's Mike McCurdy and Patrick Murphy have more in this edition of our gardening program, Grow.
How does your garden grow? Well, thanks to technology, you can keep tabs on it day and night, anywhere in the world, on your phone. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert, Patrick Murphy from Illinois State University's School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum. Hey, Murph, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
And we're talking about outdoor weather stations and outdoor garden cameras. What are the important things to track with a weather station? I guess the basics like temperature, rainfall, relative humidity, things like that?
They do capture the basics, and this wireless technology is actually much more than a glorified rain gauge, because they can collect some of the extra layers that we are all familiar with, like barometer readings that include dew point, but they also can capture things like the duration of a weather event. It can track your sunrise and sunset and total number of hours of sunlight for an area, and some of these wireless weather stations also include software to help you record what is observed, and you can use it for management.
So I love this kind of stuff, but, you know, my lot in town is a third of an acre. What's the advantage to gardeners like me getting such detailed, hyper-local weather info? What do I gain?
I think that we, for one, we get to bang our Grow corporate drum and say, listen, we're trying to come up with less of an impact on the environment, less use of chemicals, less exposure to ourselves and other living things to these chemicals, and also less wasted time and money. So, you know, a lot of crop farmers throughout the United States and the rest of the world, for that matter, they have figured out with the use of some of these kinds of technologies that you don't need to apply fertilizer to the entire property. And they have that assistance from global positioning and things like that. But you can utilize that same technology through some of these premier wireless weather stations. The information that is collected from all the weather events can help you understand when is the best time to water, for example, and how much. So I don't care if you live in the small urban metropolitan scenario or you're out in some sprawling landscape and you know, abuts a golf course or whatever. If you have a desire to manage your property to the highest level, I think this is a great way to go.
So the analysis can help me out with things that I don't even know that I need help with.
Yeah, and they could help you understand, okay, so my weather observations and the conditions I need for fertilizer fall, you know, before Mother's Day. So a certain time after Mother's Day, I also know from the records that are collected that it's typically very favorable weather. So that might be a good time to plan having some neighbors over for a outdoor picnic or something like that. So you could actually extend the love of your fellow man into your daily repertoire just by minimizing exposure and taking advantage of the best weather days that were captured by your weather station.
Can it help me pinpoint like a date to apply spring lawn fertilizer, the one that includes the crabgrass pre-emergent?
I think it could help you because it's going to give you a air temperature reading. Some of the nicer, like La Crosse Scientific Weather Station, actually gives you a soil temperature reading. That's really huge for understanding what's the best time to put down pre-emergence and things like
that. Because as that soil temperature gets hotter, that's when those seeds start to pop.
It's critical. That's right. And if you know that you're approaching that and you're getting yourself ready, per se, by, you know, clearing away any litter vegetation that's on your lawn so you get good contact and that you water in this product after you apply it. The weather station, I think, gives somebody the best vantage point for doing all that.
What was the brand name you mentioned?
La Crosse Scientific and AccuRite are two brands that have the most thorough coverage, including softwares that help you manage it all.
When I looked online, the prices ranged from close to $1,000 down to, you know, under $100.
That makes sense to me, Mike, because the real expensive ones that I noticed, they would be useful if you were, say, a superintendent of the grounds at a local hospital or local school. You know, that's something that's probably within reach of their budget.
And that might be overkill for a homeowner, though.
Too much for the homeowner, yeah. The $150 range was really kind of the best range I saw in those two brands that had the most features to offer, primarily the software included to help you manage the data.
So weather stations provide data. Cameras can put those pretty pictures on your computer or phone, and I assume can also help track arrival of things like pests or, you know, when when that day lily blooms for the first time every July.
That's right. It's going to give you actual visual cues of when to exercise your integrated pest management operations. And so if you're collecting weather data and you can add to that software information that on the first day of June you saw your first Japanese beetle or whatever, it might be some time. It could be 2 to 3 years before you realize the full benefits of managing your weather station and these images at this level.
Integrated pest management. You referred to this before we started talking as IPM. Can you just explain that?
Yeah, integrated pest management is something that is a strategy to help you scout for trouble, and it's based on what is specifically in your garden, your little patch of the world, you know. So you might be scouting for turf bugs, you're scouting for you know, other pests, including, you know, deer and wild animals and stuff that might be eating up your landscaping, and you come up with ways to eliminate those problems from your landscape without using chemicals. That's really the thing we're driving here.
You mentioned deer and wildlife. People may not realize it, but there is a lot of wildlife in just about any urban or suburban backyard, and even more in the country. So maybe these are just good for animal watching.
I think it's great for awareness, you know, for one thing. I think it's a joy to know what you're sharing your outdoors with. And, you know, the comment about the cosmopolitan wildlife, it's really fascinating how much wildlife is hiding in all of that lack of green.
Hiding in plain sight often.
And a lot of times, yeah. And a lot of times I think, too, they're harmless. And if you know they're there, you don't really have to do anything about them, but it's what might follow them or come with them that could be a hazard.
Yeah, an opossum or a raccoon walking through your yard probably isn't a problem unless it's living there.
But think about that, too, for a second. And deploying these cameras for surveillance of your garden, that's a little different than deploying the camera on your property to capture the wildlife. You know, you might have the camera pointed into an open area to get views of the wildlife. But if you're using the game cameras to help you with your IPM and your landscape management, the angles might be a little different. You might be shooting back towards the house rather than shooting away from the house. But either way, you're also going to get a little fringe benefit of some added security.
Or maybe you just buy a couple of extra cameras and point one at the bird feeder.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Are these motion sensing, or are you just tracking? Are they just looping the video?
They have motion sensing modes, Mike, but they also have timed intervals. So
it'd be like a time lapse.
Yeah. Moultrie camera, for example, that I have used on our property, it can give you time lapse photos. And it can give you like multiple images when it first detects movement. It's very, very diverse in the specifications.
Night vision, or does it have an integrated light that pops on or something?
Both. And that's related to what you're willing to spend or invest on it.
And besides knowing what critters are stopping by, I guess it could help return a stray dog or a cat to its owner if you keep seeing a stray dog with a tag in your yard.
I think that's an excellent idea and an excellent selling point all on its own. Is to help keep track of, you know, pets are members of our family. They're kind of loved ones, if you will. They are definitely loved ones. But it also might keep a neighbor from your berry patch, too.
Oh, sure. You know. So you can see who's picking those raspberries before you get to them. Okay, if you have any questions about these gadgets or anything in the garden, you can submit them at wglt.org/grow. That's where Kathy Sally submitted a question about army worms. I've never heard of army worms. We'll talk about that next week.
That's great.
So something
very timely.
Something to dread in your yard.
Something to avoid.
Okay, that's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow.
Also at WGLT.org, find past episodes of Grow and subscribe to the podcast. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. About 150 people recently participated in a ceremonial barn raising in Goodfield, but it wasn't to help an ailing farmer. It was the beginning of the rebirth of a theater that for 40 years put on performances that drew full houses and television celebrities to central Illinois. GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds talks with Abby Reel and Mary Simon, who will co-manage a new $1.5 million Barn 3 dinner theater that will host the Conklin Players Theater Troupe, as well as events such as weddings and concerts.
Chance started dinner theater in 1967. I met him in 1969. In 1975, we came out to the country, and he found the Round Top Barn. And so from 75 until 2015, we ran it as a dinner theater. That's 40 years. And we have a wonderful following. I had no idea until the barn closed in 2015, which was because of storm damage, how many people embraced the barn and how they enjoyed the barn. So our mission was always to get people out of their day, to let them have a happy experience where they could come with friends and enjoy a meal and a show and laugh and have a good time and forget their problems for the day. That's always just been my mission.
So I know when your husband passed away, it was such a huge blow. And at the time, you sort of soldiered on without him. That was one of the probably many challenges you faced.
Well, I feel lucky, Colleen. I mean, when I look back on my life, I feel that I have had a blessed life. I bought the barn officially in 1995. Chance passed on Christmas Eve of 99. And so I had really been running the barn for 5 years. I had a strong company around us, and it's always been me and the audience and the actors, and we, as you say, soldiered on and loved doing it. It's always been my passion. How lucky am I with all the things that have happened in my life that I still live my passion. You know, no matter what happens, I for 45 years did what I love to do. How many people can say that, you know?
So when the storm damage happened, that was kind of a fatal blow, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And we thought that we had business interruption, but we were denied. And by the way, we're going to court.
What are you trying to resolve there?
Well, there was storm damage, and it was we have clocked and they have documented that on one side of the barn was a mesocyclone, and on the other side was a wet microburst. And what it did was it filled up with pressure and popped the sides so that the barn was falling on the north side than the south, but it was falling, so we couldn't have people anymore. And the insurance company, who had just inspected the barn on May 27th of 2015, and this happened on August 18th of 2015, and said that it was insurable and in good condition, said that it fell down on its own. And so they denied the claim and denied me business interruption, which I would have used to get established in Morton and continue to pay my company. Then I knew I was done. So we closed officially on September 30.
That had to seem like a very dark time for you.
But Five Points, bless their hearts, said, "You come in and put a show in our theater and we'll split the ticket." And I said, "I can do that." And I paid the company as much as I could because they were devastated, Colleen. They lost full-time jobs and they just couldn't recover. They were making good money at the barn and there was just no way for them to recover. So I tried to help them. And it wasn't until June of last year that I said to Five Points, "We have to quit. I can't afford to produce anymore." And it was the fall of 16 where I said, "This is done." The kids all looked at me and said, "Well, what are we going to do?" And I said, "I don't know. Something will happen." And about 2 weeks later, this woman walked into my life, Abby Reel.
I'm Colleen Reynolds. You're listening to Mary Simon and Abby Reel, who together are working to build a new Barn 3 dinner theater along with a wedding and event destination in Goodfield.
It's funny when I think about how I came into Mary's life. I actually came into her life when I was about 5 years old. I think my dad, Les Reel, and my mom, Carolyn, were big fans of the barn. And so I grew up attending performances, and my mom and dad were close with Mary and Chance. And so when I was five, my dad brought me to my first show, and pulled Mary aside and said, Mary, I want to introduce you to the next Mary Simon. And that was sort of my introduction.
It really seems like fate had its hand.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that. I think, you know, I had read in the papers about Mary's announcement that she was officially, you know, closing up shop and was devastated. And it was only a few weeks before that that some friends of mine had noticed that this brick house property where we're sitting right now was for sale. And I had been working for 10 years on the side. I had run my own wedding business. And it really was my own passion. And so this property was brought to my attention and it was beautiful. And sort of the idea of transitioning this property and the barn into a wedding venue just exploded onto my forward-thinking brain. And so I called Mary up and said, I've got a crazy idea. Could we meet and talk? I'd like to just see what your thoughts are. And I think moving forward, the ability to cross-purpose dinner theater performances and keep the company active and keep them performing, especially during the months where the highest demand was, which was usually October through April, really works in everyone's best interests. And then transitioning the venue into weddings and special events for the summer works because it gives the actors balance. They can take vacations, have some time off, you know, something Mary hardly ever got. And also then lets us have a more holistic experience on the property.
I want to make sure this house that we're sitting in, was this a house that you lived in or was it part of the property you owned?
We bought it in 1983 and it ran it as a bed and breakfast and a tea room until 1994. And how interesting, Colleen, that I did the first remodel on the house and turned it into a bed and breakfast and tea room. It is really strange for me to be back in this house and doing it again. But I was out of about four shows when we first bought it in 83, and I would seat the people, say hello to everybody, and then come over here and work. And then Chance would come and get me when it was about midnight to go home. But I would work every night over here. And I did that for about four shows, which would be about probably about 4 or 5 months so that I could get this up to where it needed to be. But I painted, and now here I am again painting and plastering and wood puttying and decorating. Yeah. And what we our goal is to take it back as close as we can to what it was, and then let people enjoy it, and they'll be able to rent the whole house. And then I'll move again.
So this will be part of your rental space for weddings and events?
Yeah, long term, that's the goal. Yeah, so we think in 3 or 4 years, Mary is really committed to staying here and being on site with me and helping us get the wedding thing off the ground. It was a big investment, but in the end, I think it was one of the best investments we could have made, reuniting this property with the barn property. We've also gained a dance and fitness center right next door, where Tamara Chalicombe is now operating Velocity Dance Center. Tamara Chalicombe is a longstanding member of the Conklin Dinner Theater Players, and she is, you know, fulfilling her lifelong dream of being able to teach dance. And we now have over 150 students who are coming for dance classes, fitness classes. We've got yoga, we've got wrestling clinics, cheer clinics, cooking classes. So we really are meeting a unique community need right here in our own backyard.
Right now, that is generating income that you probably need to be paying the mortgage on this and then towards the construction loan.
Yes, so we're really lucky. At least the income we're generating off of this property is helping us break even. So once the barn reopens, the dance center is actually going to host their first recital there. And Tamara's been working on the theme and she's going to call it a barn raising.
Are you currently hosting any events in this building?
In the brick house at the moment, we've not been hosting any events just because, you know, we're living here and we've been working so hard to get it back up to standard, I guess you could say. But in the studio, we have been hosting a lot of events. So folks have actually been booking birthday parties for their kids at the studio space. And now that we'll be able to seat a bit more, Mary typically maxed out at about 250. We'll be a little bit closer to 300 for dinner theater. And then also if we were to rearrange our seating and do more like a rows instead of tables, we can seat up to 400. So so we feel really lucky that we'll be able to accommodate a few more folks, and it'll be a really intimate venue that you still can fit quite a few people into and either have really big or really small, and so we feel like we'll fit that kind of middle range performing events center category really well.
Is the model going to be a lot like what Mary was doing with the bring your own booze? Are you going to follow the same formula?
Well, in terms of how Dinner Theater will operate, yes, exactly the same. We have the same food coming back, the same menu, the same buffet, the same fabulous garlic butter dip that everybody is crazy over. The raspberry vinaigrette will be there, the coconut cream pie, you know, so on and so forth. In terms of alcohol, we're actually in an interesting place. There's several new businesses that are very interested, larger name franchises that are interested in building on the corners in Goodfield right off 74. But many of those businesses will not build unless Goodfield legally can sell alcohol. And so far, there really hasn't been any other businesses in Goodfield that cared too much or needed it. It wasn't a necessity. There's a lot of industrial type businesses around here. But now that that's changing and we have other businesses knocking at our doors, the Village of Goodfield is really excited that now the barn is back as well. And so Mary and I, with a host of other Goodfield residents, are sort of championing the referendum process. Mary and Chance brought it forward to the referendum, got it on the ballot three separate times back in the 70s and the 80s. And each time it lost by only a margin of about 50 votes. We just have a lot of unanimous support from the Village of Goodfield, primarily because not just because of what we're doing, but also because of these other businesses that everybody really would like to have. We're collecting signatures right now, and we fully expect it to be on the ballot November 6th, and then the Village will vote. But other than that, everything Dinner Theater will look and feel and taste exactly as it did before.
Visually, give me an idea of what the new barn is going to look like, and are you calling it Barn 3?
So yes, the barn 3 honestly will look very similar inside to the old barn. I think the roof is what everyone would just sit and stare at for hours, and Mary's compared it to the hull of a ship when you'd come in and see those individual wood panels, you know, stretched in the arch. We'll still have the haymow or the upper mezzanine where folks would sit. Our seating arrangement is exactly the same, except for we're able to add a few more tables because we're increasing the size just a bit. The box office will be opened up considerably in preparation to be a place where we could host sort of that cocktail hour for weddings before they might enter into the reception space. So that will be wide open with a much smaller box office, and then a lot of seating in there, a big fireplace. It will really feel like a gathering room that will be very comfortable to sit and visit before the show begins. We are adding an elevator, so that's the beautiful thing. The upper mezzanine, which was never accessible to anyone in wheelchairs or walkers or canes, will now be totally accessible. So to be able to carry on both Chance and my dad, Les Real, his legacy, my dad was very connected to our community. So he was very passionate about bringing people together and celebrating and benefits and fundraisers and things like that. He hosted those in his own barn, which was a livestock center, you know. And so to really carry on sort of that feeling of community that he instilled in me with the talent and the expertise of Mary and the Conklin Players, and be able to continue offering them a home, to me feels like just a dream come true.
Which I'm sure is interesting for the students whose lives that you touched through your advice all along the way, because I'm sure you gave that message to them many times. Follow your passion, figure out what that is, and then follow it.
I've been, for the last several years, the Associate Director of Career Development at Illinois Wesleyan University, and I'm also an Illinois Wesleyan alum. What did Minor Myers say? But follow your passion. And I'll never forget that quad moment when Minor Myers himself asked me that same question walking on the quad as a freshman at Illinois Wesleyan. And when this project started percolating in my mind, I had to laugh and say, Abby, I sit there every day and challenge other students to do what they love and what they want to do, this is my opportunity. So I had to give myself a dose of my own medicine.
Well, and the only reason the project is this far is because of Abby and her determination and her fortitude to have now financing in place.
Speaking of financing, did you have hurdles with that?
I have been to more banks this year than I have ever visited in my lifetime. I tell you what, there's a lot of energy behind entrepreneurs in our culture today, but then when you actually hit the banking system, it's a very different reality. I think a lot changed after the financial crisis back in 08. Character loans are a thing of the past. You got to prove and show them the money up front. So it has been very difficult. But, you know, the bankers who really stood by my side were the ones who came out to the property. Once they saw what we were doing here, once they experienced and toured the brick house, saw the barn, saw the vision that Mary and I had, they got on board. And so I give a lot of credit to Morton Community Bank. And I'll give special credit to Shelley Hunt, who's the banker who's been working with me at Morton Community, and Marcia Schlitt from Growth Corp in Springfield. Those two ladies were incredibly brave, I would say, and really championed us. And as women, they did seem to understand the project, especially the wedding side of things. They just got it.
So your goal is to open and be ready for business with the dinner theater when?
January, February 2019. That's a vague response right now. I know our customers really want us to give them that day. What I can tell you for sure is that by Labor Day of this year, we will know our opening date and we will open ticket sales.
GLT's Colleen Reynolds talking with Abby Reel and Mary Simon of the Barn 3 Dinner Theater. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University's School of Communication. Our website, WGLT.org, is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Ryan Denham, Eric Stock, Mike McCurdy, and Colleen Reynolds. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.